Here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into Friday. It is the 21st day of November, and we are brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. You'll find Landscaper's Corner in Lexington at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day today brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional foundation repair and waterproofing company in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. Our question is it too early to decorate for Christmas? Put up your Christmas decorations, you tell us. At WVLKAM.com, tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday, our question was, is the president's immigration proposal the right move? 54% of you says doesn't matter where it came from, amnesty isn't the way to go. 35% said he should have waited for action from Congress. And 11% said something needed to be done. Well, this is, of course, as always, a Forensic Friday. At Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
We have a great guest this morning.
Well, the police chief is here, Ronnie Baston.
Are you not agreeing with me?
Sure.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, was that a little hesitation?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Yeah, well.
Ronnie, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here.
How long you been police chief?
7 years.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, how long have you been on the police force?
30 years.
Wow. You do a good job.
Well, thank you, Jack.
We've got a great police department. You took over a great police department.
We have some great folks.
Yeah. You work with them every day, Ray?
Yes.
Yep.
And we work, there are different divisions within the police, and that's probably the wrong term, but the Detective Bureau, which is called the Bureau of Investigation, the Bureau of Patrol, and the Forensic Services Unit, which may be part of the Bureau of Investigation, and traffic, that kind of, those kind of things. We work with all of them, and we don't have a problem with anybody. I mean, they're all very bright, and they make good decisions. And
did you come up during the Bluegrass conspiracy days?
I was right after that, Jack. I came on 1984, so okay. Some of that was happening. While I was in recruit school, though, Drew Thornton jumped out of an airplane in Knoxville, and they came in and told us about it.
Is that right? And you were in school then?
I was in school then.
Anybody that hadn't been around a while or hadn't read the book, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, well, I had. I read that, and I've been around.
You were Commonwealth Attorney.
Here. Yeah. I wasn't here.
Were you in Paducah?
No, I was in the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
And my job at that point was what they called it, the special prosecutor. And I'd go around the state prosecuting political corruption, and I'd prosecute police officers that local police wouldn't, or local prosecutors wouldn't do. One of the guys I ran into during that period of time was with the state police. His name was Ralph Ross. And Ralph Ross was the hero.
Right. In the book.
In the book. Well.
Was he in reality?
Absolutely not.
That's what I thought.
He was the state police officer that I absolutely did not trust at all. And he had, I think, kind of a special relationship with the author.
Yep. And she was a Channel 27 reporter.
Sally Denton is her name. And it took me 4 months to read Bluegrass Conspiracy because I'd pick it up, read a page or two, and get so angry that I'd then the next day go pick it up from where I'd thrown it. So any rate, so much for that.
Ray said something the other day that was so interesting to me because I didn't know this, and I don't think most people do. And that is when you call 911, you don't talk to a dispatcher.
No, you talk to a call taker.
Call taker.
Right.
And that call taker, while you're telling them what your situation is typing on the computer to the dispatcher. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I thought that was really interesting. I did not know that, and I don't think most people know that.
Yeah, the volume of calls that come into that dispatch center is just astounding, and we have to have several call takers fielding those calls and getting the information and entering it. And then the dispatchers stay very busy just dispatching the calls and marking the officers out. And then when they get finished, putting them back in service.
And I guess triaging, getting them in the right order to, right. You know, according to.
Right. We have a priority system, too.
Yeah.
Based on the severity of the call, it can be elevated in terms of when it gets dispatched.
How are these call takers trained?
Well, they have a very formal training program that they have to go through before they can be certified. There's a certified training program that they have to go through. So it's, you know, it's a significant part of who they are and what they do.
Before we give away all the secrets about 911, Robert Stack, who is used to be a police officer for many years, and then
he had the Untouchables chief. That show the right, Untouchables. Yeah,
that's right, Jack. And well, you and I know that, but right. Most of the people listening have right. No clue what we're talking about.
Yeah, Ronnie doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. So what? But he's coming in on December the 5th.
Good.
To talk all about. He's now in charge of that.
Okay.
And he wants to come and talk about it. And so I don't want the police chief giving away all our secrets.
Well, you invited Ronnie here today for a very good reason.
Yes. Anybody that's paying attention to the news knows that this situation out in Ferguson, Missouri is about to, I think, maybe have a serious development in the next few days anyway, if what you believe in the media is true. And that this is a situation in which a young black man was shot and killed by a Ferguson police officer. Now, how that came about or what the circumstances are around that has been a subject of great controversy. On one side is this hands up, don't shoot thing, and the other side has been that the police officer was confronted and there was a struggle inside the vehicle and that sort of thing. And the real facts, of course, are being discussed by a grand jury in St. Louis County. And they have been considering this case, I guess, since August. Evidence is being taken and so forth and so on. And the real facts are being laid out there. And we're told, if you, like I said, if you believe the media, that there will be a decision in the next few days about whether or not the police officer will be charged, indicted, and charged, or there will be no indictment. And people are very concerned, given the fact that there were so many protests previously, that this may turn into something more. And as a result, the National Guard has been activated in Missouri, and the police are on alert, and the Ferguson police have been told, I guess, to stand down, and that the St. Louis County Police Department is going to be dealing with the situation. And it's so I thought it would be interesting to hear from Chief Baston about, so how are the police trained? And how are the police, how do they deal with all of these things? And
we will do that when we come back. 25, and if you have a question or comment along the way, 25. We're back with Chief Ronnie Baston, of course, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us this morning, and based on a pending matter there in Ferguson, Missouri, talking about how police departments are trained and so on, just to be ready in a situation like this. Ray?
Chief, so what do you think are concerns that the thing that are going on, first of all, out in Ferguson?
Well, obviously the folks in Ferguson are taking this very seriously, as they should be, with the history that they've had there. You know, I think law enforcement around the country is watching to see what happens and see what lessons we can learn, and you know, in the event any situations were to occur in our own communities, that we'd be prepared to handle and learn lessons from what's going on in Ferguson. Our officers received training and basic training in the amount of 16 hours for crowd management. And so that's a pretty significant amount to learn how to use all the equipment that they're issued and the formations and philosophy, you know, those kinds of things that we
try to ingrain. So there's kind of a, not science, that's not the word, but crowd control, crowd management is something that there have been a lot of studies on and that sort of thing.
Well, there have been, and you know, a lot of it started in the 60s
with the riots,
riots in the 60s, and so there was a lot of thought in law enforcement that went into that, and a lot of preparation and training developed as a result of that. In the last several years, though, I think we've seen some changes and shifts in philosophies on crowd management. I know when we deal with crowds such as the NCAA celebrations, it's a very different posture than an angry crowd that's actually trying to harm someone or destroy property. And
you wouldn't handle them the same way, obviously.
No, you can handle them differently and should handle them differently. But we've learned a lot, I think, in dealing with the large crowds we've had in those situations. And so we look at the situation we're facing and determine what's the best strategy to use.
I know that in some of these what you call celebrations that typically come after basketball events,
right,
in Lexington, that there have been some people that were injured, and it's really kind of difficult to identify the people that have done this. And do you all videotape and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. We have a number of folks videotaping in the crowd, and that's how we're able to identify folks.
You have people in the department doing that?
Yes, we do.
That's cool. That's very interesting.
We have a number of folks doing that, and that's how in 2012 some of the photos from that video and photography that we had were able to put on a website and got a lot of good leads from it.
And we prosecuted, we prosecuted half a dozen people who, and Jack, these kids get a snout full of beer, and they start doing stupid things.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes these stupid things cause serious property damage or physical injuries, and they cut short their careers, because then they got the criminal record, and it's the consequences are far more significant.
And it's not a bunch of bad kids. It's a bunch of kids caught up in that mob, whatever you call it. What's the term?
Mentality.
And one person starts doing something, and like you say, they got a couple of three beers in them, and the next thing you know, things get out of hand. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'd love to talk a little bit about the criticism that the police have taken concerning their look of the military with Ronnie Bastin and Ray Larson here on News Talk 590 WVLK.
From the News Talk 590 WVLK Pharmacy Shop Information Center, I'm Scott Johnson. Here's what's happening. Expecting an outpouring of Republican criticism, President Obama is firing up an effort to gain support for his executive actions on immigration. Obama starts with a rally in Las Vegas. The White House is enlisting the aid of immigrant advocacy groups. The plan would make nearly 5 million immigrants living illegally in the U.S. eligible for work permits and protection from deportation. Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway says six counties have been chosen in a random drawing to undergo independent inquiries for potential irregularities in this month's election. Conway says those counties are Bourbon, Mercer, Owsley, Gallatin, Simpson, and Metcalf. Secretary of State John Kerry meeting with his British and French counterparts today for talks on pushing stalled Iran nuclear talks ahead. News at the top and bottom of the hour. Breaking news instantly. Depend on Lexington's news, weather, and traffic leader, News Talk 590 WVLK.
We have a weekend warm-up on the way, but we'll start it off fairly chilly. Friday's highs only in the upper 30s, but we're mostly sunny. Upper 20s, stray rain to snow shower up north overnight. And then Saturday, increasing clouds, but breezy and milder. Highs jump to the mid-50s. We're in the low 40s Saturday night. Sunday showers, even some thunderstorms likely, but highs could top out around 60 degrees late in the weekend. That's the LEX. X18 Storm Tracker 3-day forecast. I'm meteorologist Tom Ackerman. On your official weather station, News Talk 590 WVLK.
Sunny skies, 20 degrees at your official weather station, News Talk 590 WVLK.
Right now, traffic from the Shell Automotive Traffic Center. Still got some pockets of congestion out there. The Leestone Road corridor has been among the busiest we've seen. Versailles Road around Parker's Mill had an earlier crash trying to get wrapped up over there. Had maybe some minor injuries in that one. Also around Winchester and New Circle, you got quite a bit of company. Winchester and I-75, lots of folks too. Right now, traffic from the Shell Automotive Traffic Center. I'm Brad Brunson, News Talk 590 WVLK.
Thank you very much, Sportsman's Warehouse. Proud to once again be our home for Cumulus Broadcasting's Homeless for the Holidays. Today's the last day, and so we're collecting non-perishable food items to be distributed to God's Pantry and also new toys to the firefighters' toy drive, and you have until closing time tonight. But our thanks to Sportsman's Warehouse, Homeless for the Holidays, hosting again this year. Sportsman's Warehouse is in Hamburg, just off Winchester Road. Got a note from Jen Miller over at Nature's Expressions. She keeps me up to date on what's going on over there. Said she ran into one of their clients having breakfast one morning. He told her that he was happy with the project that they worked on, but he was sorry that he didn't get them started earlier in the fall. They just installed several features, and he says the one his daughter likes the best is the water feature that she calls her waterfall. They have a fire pit, which I'm sure they're going to be getting some good with. And they would love to come to your house, listen to your, you know, what your thoughts are, see your space, your home, and then they can make some recommendations based on the, for example, the grade of your yard, your backyard, design of your home, your budget, obviously, and your family's needs. They work all year long, even when the weather's lousy. So give them a call, 885-0015. You can log on to the website for some great ideas, KentuckyBackyard.com, and follow them on Facebook.
Clark Howard. The pretexting problem continues to grow. That's where criminals pretend to be from your bank or credit card company, trying to get personal information out of you. The best answer is ignore anything that's trying to get information from you, even if there's a remote possibility it actually is from your bank or credit card company, especially when they start trying to poke around and find out what you make.
Saturday evening at 6, Sunday evening at 8 on News Talk 590 WVLK.
Your news needs to count. Count on us for the best news at the top and bottom of the hour. News Talk 590 WVLK. Depend on it.
It's 9:35, 25 minutes away from 10 o'clock. News Talk 590 WVLK. And we have our police chief with us, Ronnie Baston, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Is it okay if we go into this military subject?
Yeah.
Because they were criticized because they actually with the with some of that equipment and machinery and the uniforms they were wearing, it looked like a military standoff.
Well, it did. And, you know, the equipment itself shouldn't be the controversy, I don't think. How equipment's used and the decisions, you know, when to deploy some of that certainly needs some review and thought gone into it. But and I think that's what we see in Ferguson. I think there's a thought that the response was very, very strong initially, before it maybe rose to the level of justifying bringing in all the big guns.
You were saying in the break, and it's so right, there's a fine line there. You have to show force. You have to show that you're in charge, but you don't want to overplay that hand with 50 caliber machine guns.
That's right. Depends on the crowd situation. If you have a crowd that's celebratory or protesting and not being violent, just a presence is what you're looking for, there's no need to bring out everything. Sometimes bringing out the equipment can change the mentality of the crowd.
Yeah.
So okay. It's,
Let's go to the phones here. This is Douglas. You might stick those headphones on there, Ronnie. Good Douglas, good morning.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I've known Ray Larson from forever.
All right, 23 minutes before 10 o'clock, News Talk 590 WVLK. There's a friend that you've known for a while.
Yeah, Doug Johnson.
Okay.
We have gotten some military equipment here in Lexington. And I think a helicopter, two helicopters. And how are they used?
We primarily actually fly one of those helicopters. The other one is used for standby or when the other one's down for maintenance. But we use them in a variety of situations. We use them to locate people. We use them when we're doing drug investigations and following targets and those kinds of things. And they've been invaluable to us. They've allowed us to make some cases that we wouldn't have been able to make.
They have a flare system.
What is it, a flare system?
Flare, and that detects, you've seen these on television probably, where they detect body heat.
Oh, yeah.
And they can help in fires and that. How does that work?
Absolutely. It's forward-looking infrared, I think, is the actual title of it. But it detects differences in heat signatures. So literally, if someone robs a place and it's really cold outside, they've held a gun or a weapon in their hand and they drop it, if we get over it quick enough from 3,000 feet in the air, we might be able to find that on the ground.
Well, they found a guy hiding in a barn in a homicide case that because of the body heat with the flare system. And it's really interesting because one of my buddies is Don Evans, who used to be a police officer. And he said that they can, even over in the fire department, they can use that. I mean, that can be used from the air to find out where the hottest part of a fire is, which is where it started, or that sort of thing. It's really fascinating, and it's things that came from the military and that sort of thing.
Do we have any, like, Humvee-looking? Mm-hmm. We don't
have any that we've gotten from the military. We have a Bearcat, which was bought off of a federal grant that was used actually yesterday in that situation out in Winburn, which it's armored to protect the officers that are responding.
It's very interesting because, and I want Ronnie to say this, what this character said, okay, Barrett carried it in his house. Relate that to me. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I was talking to one of the investigators, and when they talked to the gentleman after the arrest, he said, I wasn't coming out for you all. But when I saw the tank come, I knew it was time to come out.
Well, that did the job then, didn't it?
That's exactly right. One of the another thing is the these Darth Vader kind of helmets looking things that the police wear in these kind of areas. I think some of the complaint is about those things. Well, what? I mean, tell me about that.
Well, you know, a lot of that equipment, personal equipment, is to protect the officer. Those helmets are made out of Kevlar. So, you know, a head shot, if someone gets shot, is very, very serious and usually results in death. So we use those to protect the officers in real high-risk situations. In crowd control situations, some of the biggest dangers to folks are flying bottles and rocks and those kinds of things, and so you can be injured without having a proper protection.
When I was in training in the Army, we got some training. They actually had some things that were thrown. You talked about the 60s. This was in the early 70s, and they had things, projectiles, that were actually thrown during riot situations. And you talk about scary stuff. One I remember was a softball with spikes going through it at different locations. Can you imagine being hit by that?
I had a vest on and helmet and all that and a face shield last year over on State Street, and that was relatively calm compared to some other situations we'd seen, but I got hit with a beer bottle in the side. So it's you know, people just throw them into the crowd, and they, if you're not protected, you can be injured.
Really hurt. John, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Question, Chief Baston. The chief in Ferguson said that if this officer is, no charges are brought, he will be immediately reinstated and put back on patrol. And I don't know, I just don't see how the guy could ever go back on patrol there. Just curious as to how you would handle that kind of situation.
Well, I think you have to look at the totality of the circumstances and look at whether the officer is just going to be capable of serving the community in the future. Certainly, there's a lot of thought about that situation, and he's going to have a tough time if he does go back to the street, no doubt.
I'll tell you what I'm concerned about.
What's that? John, thanks.
I'm concerned that, because I pay very close attention to that, because one of my good friends in the prosecutorial community is Bob McCullough, who is the prosecutor there and is the person that has been criticized by the Al Sharptons of the world.
Yeah.
And he is a excellent prosecutor. But my concern is if something comes out that indicate that this police officer is not charged, that some of these out-of-towners or
rabble-rousers.
Serious militants.
Yeah.
Are going to start shooting at police officers. My biggest concern for this guy, the police officer in question, is whether or not somebody will assassinate
him. Right.
That's a major concern.
Sure.
And if there's no indictment, I'm also concerned about the safety of the people on the grand jury. I mean, because there are some lunatics.
Right.
That are in the midst of people who act, who think that they have a legitimate protest, regardless.
And Joseph,
so I worry about that.
Yeah. Joseph, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I wanted to speak on this Ferguson case.
Yes.
I believe that they'll find this officer not guilty, or refuse to indict him, just like they've done in a lot of the previous cases where you have these white police officers running around shooting unarmed black alleged criminals. And I think that Mr. Lawson knows pretty much of what the outcome is going to be. It'll be like Tony Sullivan. And the reason why it'll end up like that is because people like him, they got these little tricks up their sleeves that they play. Like when Tony Sullivan was shot and killed by Fogle, I believe that was his name, what you have here is a dead, unarmed body, and that police officer should have been charged with reckless homicide or some type of manslaughter or something. But in a case like, I mean, you laugh how you want to, but I know your game. Now, you take a case like Tony Sullivan, the police was looking for him, and there's all this media attention of the fact that he was an alleged criminal. So you already have a prejudice created by the so-called grand jury before they even get the case. When you get a case like that, there should have been like a change of venue. When you look at the number of unarmed black men that's been shot and killed by these white police officers, take the case in Louisville. They pulled a guy over. And granted, he had a gun, but he took off running, and the police shot him in his back and killed him. Now, I was listening to Ray Larson on your show a few months ago, and he was talking about what's what as far as criminal behavior. And he said if someone is running away from you and you shoot him and kill him, that's a crime. Well, the prosecutors charged this police officer, but when they go to take a jury trial, you have what is predominantly white jurors who just refuse to convict. So we have some problems in this country as far as how jury selections are done.
All right, here's Joseph. Got to jump in. We're gonna have to take a break, but when we come back, We'll get the comments of both of our guests on everything that you just brought up to us. I appreciate your call. 253-5959, touch star 590 from 8.
Favorite place to buy a book in Lexington in the 2014 Reader's Choice Awards. The Morris Bookshop, 882 East High Street.
9:47, 13 before 10. That is time to pop the question with a beautiful engagement ring from the Castle, the biggest discounters of diamonds and fine jewelry. Mostly sunny, upper 30s today, increasing cloudy. We had a caller going into the break, and I have to take these breaks at the right time or we get behind in our spot load. So my apologies to cutting the guy off. But Ray, we'll get your comments first on the questions that he brought
Tony
up.
Tony Sullivan,
yes.
Particularly. I was Commo attorney when that happened. Phil Vogel was a sergeant at the time, and they were looking for Tony Sullivan, and they found him. And Vogel had his firearm cocked and ready to shoot. And then when he saw that there was no, that Sullivan was not going to be an issue, then he uncocked it in a way that he shouldn't have done it. You know,
which caused the
one hand, yeah. and the hammer slipped out of his out from under his thumb and went off, and the bullet struck Tony Sullivan in the top of his head and killed him. And there was a lot of frustration, and you heard a lot of it,
yeah,
with John, and I understand that. Now, what we did was we presented that case to the grand jury that was made up of citizens in our community, and it's randomly drawn. We have nothing to do with who's on the grand jury, and it was made up. It was a diverse group that had blacks and whites on it. They listened to not only all the evidence, Jack, but we invited people who had anything to say about it, which is unusual,
yeah,
to come in and testify. And the grand jury, I'm not in the room when they vote. They were advised of the appropriate potential laws that would apply. Reckless homicide was one of them, and they chose not to indict. And, that's just the system. Now, if you can agree with it or you can disagree with it, but it was done that way. And I disagree with John when he said there was an agenda by me or by anybody else. There was no agenda. The result was the Sullivan family then, because it was not determined by the grand jury to be a crime, then they filed a civil suit that was settled by the city for, I think, $1.5 million, something like that. I don't know. I think that's what it was. But that didn't mean that Vogel was not negligent. It meant that he was not criminally negligent.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. He was civilly negligent, and then as a result, that's what happened. It was a sad event in our community.
Absolutely.
And nobody likes that, but that's what happened.
You have a comment, Ronnie?
No, I was, I guess at the time, I was doing firearms training. So, I looked at that end of it, and I remember the FBI report on the weapon that they looked at, and ammunition, those kind of things. If I recall, the dent on the primer of the round, they measured that, fired some of the other ammunition he had, and that it was, according to their test, 50% of the time with the dent on the primer that he had in the shell that went off, the round, it would go off, and 50% it wouldn't. So it did lend credibility to what he said happened with the thumb slipping off.
Yeah.
So the hammer didn't fully go forward.
It was interesting, Jack, because the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice was involved in the investigation with us, and they reached the same conclusion. Yeah, and it was, like I said, I understand John's frustration, yeah, but that was how it happened.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you, Ronnie. Stand by. We have an update from ABC Live with Lee's coming up next. Hope you have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday morning at